The title of this session in any other conference, and this would probably be estate planning. But I think that scares too many people off, so we just say how to accomplish your objectives with your money. Most people underestimate the value of their estate. For example, when you buy a domestic airlines ticket now, on any United States carrier, that's what I understand, it's all of them, the carrier assumes a $75,000 responsibility for carrying you. So if they're at fault, why, your widow, your estate would automatically collect $75,000 just on that. Because we have some assets to protect, we carry $100,000 liability insurance on our vehicles. In fact, we carry a general liability policy for that. So if through the negligence of the navigators, you should be so unfortunate as to get involved with one of our vehicles and the company thought you had a good case, why, your estate could be worth $100,000 just as a result of having been out here at conference. And most businesses carry high rates of insurance like this. So your potential estate may be larger than you would sit down and figure out. Now I'm going to talk about some gimmicks here in a little bit. But just one little thing. For example, on federal estate tax, if the estate amounts to more than $60,000, there is a federal estate tax on this. Now, federal estate tax is different from most other taxes. This is a tax that originated under the English common law system where the king owned all the property and he would lease it out to tenants. Now, if a certain family had done a good job and the tenant who had it was getting too old and wanted to quit farming, he wanted to pass it on to one of his heirs, he would have to pay the king a tax on the right to transfer title to that property or his lease to somebody else. Kind of like sales tax today, that we have to pay for the privilege of buying anything. Inheritance taxes are generally levied on the person who receives the money. But the estate tax is levied on the person who owns the estate, and it's in the process of transfer. So just like there's a $600 exemption for every individual on your income tax, there's a $60,000 exemption on estate tax. Now, if you should be involved in an airplane accident, just use this for an illustration, and your wife inherited $75,000, $15,000 of that would be taxable. The federal estate tax runs from 3% on a small estate to 77% on a $10 million estate. So you see, the fellow that has $10 million can't pass on very much of it to anybody else because the estate tax is 77%.
Yes. Is this open to any questions or discussion?
Right.
That is so unless marital deduction,
isn't it? Yes, if I'm talking about now, if there's two people, I'm going to get into that in just a little bit, the marital deduction here. But the point I wanted to make here, just as a gimmick, if you ever buy, and now this damage claim I'm talking about, this is something that not much you can do about, but if you bought a $75,000 accident policy, and down there, there'd be a place to check, you know, who's the owner of it. If you made your wife the owner of a $75,000 policy, there would be no estate tax on that because she owns it, you don't. But if you're the owner and she's a beneficiary, $15,000 of that would be subjected to federal estate tax. So there's just a lot of little gimmicks here. I'm going to talk more about some of them later, but that's one thing. I'll catch it here. We'll talk about this, discuss it maybe a little bit later, but then sometimes the tax savings that could come from making your wife the owner of your insurance as well as the beneficiary. But we'll get into that more a little bit later. Now, just to get a broad outline here, how to accomplish your objectives with your money. The first thing to do is to have some objectives, which a lot of people, strangely enough, do not have. Now, I've got a little sheet I copied out of a magazine here on estate planning. I'd just like you to read. It helps keep you alert. So we ask the question, who or for whom are you planning? When most people come to plan their wills, they say something like this to themselves. Let me see, I have securities, and I have my home, and that watch which Father gave me, and my life insurance, and of course, my own business. Now, who shall I leave these things to? Well, that's one way to start planning the estate, but it is not the most advisable place to start. It is far better to commence with naming those for whom you want to plan. You will then be dealing interesting human problems instead of merely with the mechanical problems of property. Suppose you start by making a list of those whom you should or would like to benefit. And here's the important part in here. Put your own name at the top of the list. The reason for this is that estate planning should be coordinated with life planning. Now, it's real interesting how many people feel that the best thing they can do with their hard-earned property is to leave the most of it to their children after they die, not realizing that their children probably have far greater needs right now than they will after you die. This is when you can really give them a boost, and that this could be the worst thing that could ever happen to your children, to inherit a sum of money at the time you die, upset their economy, their spiritual life, and everything else. But this is just kind of a tradition with most of us that I don't want the responsibility for my money. I just want to put it away, and then what happens is for somebody else to decide at a future date. Or if you make a charitable contribution, when you make this decision, it's for a Christian work in which you have confidence. But 25 years from now, when you die, this outfit may be teaching heresy. And yet, instead of using it while you had confidence, you see, most people just put it off. That's the tendency, put it off. And you never have the satisfaction of accomplishing your objectives with what you have. So our brochure here that you have, I want to put these out in the further part of it here. I wrote a copy for this thing, and I think it emphasizes what I feel is important. So over here in the first inside page, I just mentioned that many people help support the Lord's work by giving regularly for their current income. At the same time, they may be accumulating resources to be used for future family needs for retirement. That's a normal thing to do. As time passes, however, these accumulated funds are not as necessary as they once were. It is especially satisfying to use them in God's ministries during your lifetime. This folder lists several plans which show how you could further the work of the Lord through the Navigators. Now, I have used something for an example, so I use that. Through a chosen plan of plans, you will be able to, 1, put your unneeded resources to work for the Lord now and enjoy the personal satisfaction of advancing the ministry in which you're interested. Keep reserve funds available for possible family emergencies. Take full advantage of the law's provision for reducing income taxes, federal, state taxes, and other taxes. Ensure that when you are no longer present to direct the use of your property and your money, it will be used according to your desire to advance the work of the Lord. Now, we've covered two subjects there, but the one to emphasize is a matter of living, giving, not after you die. So we call our program the Living and Deferred Giving Program.
because we're interested in living giving, not just something that's deferred. We don't know what the ministry of the Navigators will be 25 years from now. I have the fullest confidence in the ministry today. And I have no reason to think that I wouldn't 50 years from now. But I know I'm not taking a chance in what I invest in it today. So my whole point in this first paragraph is, start with yourself. What are your objectives with what God has given you? Now, what are some reasons that your objectives, once you have them, cannot be accomplished? And I want to give you two or three reasons that they might not be accomplished. Now, assuming that you want these objectives to be accomplished after your death, the absence of a valid will is a thing that will prevent this from being accomplished. I mentioned this morning in the meeting that among church members, 8 out of 9 die without a valid will. So, if you haven't expressed yourself in a valid will, well, the courts take over. And after long delays, many fees, why, sometimes there's some kind of a settlement reached. So, the matter of a will. I'm going to give you two or three cases with which I'm personally familiar. And I just hinted at some of these this morning. It's a very natural thing for a person to do, a husband and wife, to make out reciprocal wills, leaving everything to each other. And by the way, the advice I have that there should always be two wills. Anytime you go to an attorney, you make out one, and your wife makes out one. The reason being that she might die a week after you do. And if she does, then it's just the same as if you had no will, you see. So, the matter of a valid will. Now, since you brought up the matter of the marital deduction, we'll talk about that for a minute here. We're talking about, they're kind of large figures here, but we need to, for illustrations. I said, never underestimate the potential value of your estate. Now, explain what this federal estate tax is. Assuming we have an estate here, we just use a figure of $200,000. You are allowed to deduct the administrative costs, which run from 10 to 34%. So it would take about $20,000 to settle this estate, leaving us with $180,000. Previously, in the United States, there were two kinds of laws, separate property and community property states. In the community property state, it was assumed that half of this money belonged to the wife, and she isn't dead. So immediately, you would take half of it out of the taxable estate. Well, the other states, you see, the separate property states, they got rooked because the whole thing was taxable. So equalizing laws have been passed so that whether you're in a separate or a community property state, it is considered that the wife owns half of it. And so for estate tax purposes, one half of the estate, that is the tax on it, can be postponed until her death. So you see, this reduces it down. But this is not automatic. A proper will has to be drawn ensuring that she has absolute control of this money. If you leave it to her with the provision that she'll do such and such with it, and she does not have unrestricted right, it goes back into the estate. So, an improperly drawn will can keep you from having advantage of this particular provision of the law. So, a valid will is very important, and the absence of one can prevent your objectives from being accomplished. I mentioned just briefly this morning that most fathers expect to provide for the children as well as their wife. I talked to a man last year, and he was really shook when I gave him the example I'd read. He has four daughters, and he wants to leave them, provide for them $25,000 apiece. He's able to do this and more. But his will was drawn up, so he left everything to his wife. So I told him about the case I just read that I cited this morning of a man that died, left everything to his wife, and they'd understood all their lives. You know, they were going to give to the children after she passed on. She remarried, and then she died. And apparently it was set up so that it was a common ownership. So everything that this man had worked during his life accumulating went to a man he'd never met, and the children were penniless. And in this particular case, one of them was an invalid and went on welfare because the guy who took the money, he didn't have any interest in his former wife's problems. So it's very important that you make provision for your children, not just for your wife, if you expect them to inherit some of what you have. I see how that could happen. Now, the odds of that happening are not great, but it could happen. I read the other day about a case of a fellow out in one of the New England states that thought that he didn't have much longer to live, and he had a son that he wanted to make sure that he didn't get a cent of what he had earned, because he and the son never did make out. Well, he thought he was going to die, so he transferred everything to his wife. Well, what happened? She died. And he's tried to get his money back, and so said, did she have a will? He said, well, of course not. What would she need with a will? So the laws of the state took over, and he got one-third of what he transferred to his wife, and the son that he was trying to keep him getting anything got two-thirds of it. And there wasn't a thing he could do about it, because the laws of the state take over where there is not a valid will. Now, before I go on to mention another thing or two, do you have any comment on these thoughts? Well, I'll bet percentage-wise that there's 30 of you in this room that do not have a valid will.
Yeah. They all have one, but it's the one that the state made out for them.
Yeah. Yeah, the state will, they'll make it out. They've got the guidelines already set up. And the general laws of descent stick to blood relationships. This is what they follow. So you've got some relative that's a Christian you'd like to help, and somebody else you don't want to do anything for them. State, most cases, follow the bloodlines very closely.
What about, Jim, the aspect of where, say, if something were happened to me and I left so much of my estate to my wife and so much to the children, while they're still young, would she have access to this money to raise them, or is this going to be left untouchable until they get of age? This is a thing I was cautioned about including so much to the children, is that sometimes the wife needs the money to raise the children and can't get at it because it's tied up.
Yes, now I'll comment briefly on that, and I'm not qualified or allowed to give any legal advice, and I couldn't if I wanted to. But I believe that a minor cannot inherit money. You see, it goes to a guardian. So there is a way that this can be done so that the guardian can't spend it except on the children. But the device that is used today by more and more people is the living trust. And you can buy all kinds of books written on this. And it's amazing how useful this instrument is and how few people know anything about it. But I've got a book that gives a pretty good variety on trusts. Now, what most people would do in your situation, I think, if they wanted to use this kind of a device. Well, let me let me go a step further here. Now, I'm going to complicate this. Assuming that the estate is large enough for there to be an estate tax, many, many people are using what is known as a grandfather trust. And that would be that you leave what you have, not even to your children, but to your children's children. They're the eventual beneficiaries of it. But during her lifetime, your wife has all the income off of it to do whatever she wants to. And then it can go another generation. When she passes, then your children can have the benefit for their lifetime. But then there's what they call the law of perpetuity. This thing has to come to an end sometime. So the rule is lives in being plus 21 years. But it's possible to postpone the payment of taxes, you see. Generally one generation, but possibly two generations. So there's a way that you can provide that your wife gets all the income, you see, on this. And then you would specify in the trust that so much was to be used for the care of the children and this sort of thing. So there's ways to do this. And the way you mentioned would be hazardous without some safeguards. But there's a way to do just exactly what you want to do. All you have to do is just think it up. And then there's a way to do it through the instrument of a trust. Any other question or comment on this general subject of wills? Trusts can be set up, living trusts now, or they can be set up what are called testamentary trusts that are set up by will. Yes?
See, what's the difference then between a trust and a will?
Well, the...
if you have a trust, you have to have a will besides.
A living trust, there's an actual transfer of property from you to a trustee. And you direct the trustee what to do with it, you see. And in the case of a living trust, he does it right now. Now, since this transfer has already been made, there is no probate of anything that's in the living trust. This is one of the things they say about a trust is that there's no probate cost, there's no probate delay, and there is no probate publicity. Sometimes you hear people say, well, I wonder how much he left and who he left it to. Well, all you've got to do is go down to the courthouse because all probated wills are a matter of public record that anybody that wants to can go read them. So you see, the living trust is a transfer of property not by will, but by instrument right now. Now, the testamentary trust is established at your death, but it isn't operative during your lifetime, but your will merely sets it up. Now, I'm not competent to give all the details, but does that answer to some degree the question? Okay. Any other comment in this general area? Okay, now, the first reason that your objectives that you have in your mind may not be accomplished is because of the absence of a valid will, or the absence of a will, period. Now, the second reason would be the unfamiliarity with the tax and administrative cost situation. And I have figures that shows in the United States, estate shrinkage averages 34%. So if you thought you were going to transfer $100,000 to your wife, you'd probably end up $34,000 short if it went through the normal process. Now, I've already mentioned federal estate taxes. I think that I won't go into that anymore unless there's some other question on it, and then jump right over to the third thing. The third reason that your objectives may not be accomplished would be the unfamiliarity with the devices that are available to accomplish your purpose. so that taxes, probate costs, and these other things do not eat it up. Now, I want to give just one example, and then we won't go into this anymore, then we'll draw this up, and I'm going to carry on here indefinitely. But I'll use large figures again here because it's easier to illustrate on this marital deduction business we talked about. Suppose here's a man who has a $500,000 estate. I didn't bring me much chalk here.
Where do you get some rock?
I don't know if the conference office got any or not. I didn't see they laid any around. They just lay some around.
Close. Conference office is closed.
I'll get some. I'm going to run out before I get through here. Assuming the administrative cost is $50,000, we end up with $450,000. Now, assuming that this qualifies for the marital deduction, we can transfer half of it over here at the other side, and the $225,000 that belongs to the wife, you see, the tax on that's postponed until her death. Now, I want to write some more figures here, but I wasn't prepared. I should check the chalk next time. I don't see it on the floor and the windows or any place.
That's all we've had the last couple of days.
Well, let me go on, then I'll put the figures in here later. So we've got left out of his $225,000. He wants to make a charitable gift of $100,000. Now, there's no limit to the amount of charitable gifts that can be deducted for tax purposes. That's about the only place you can give money without limit, but it can be done. And I just might add that the people who have passed this law feel that charitable giving saves the taxpayers money in the long run, in jails, hospitals, policemen, and all this sort of thing. So they're very liberal, the laws are, with charitable givers. Well, if we took out of his $225,000, maybe I can just imagine the figures, $100,000, that leaves $125,000 taxable, right? Then everybody has a personal exemption, as I mentioned, of $60,000. So he ends up with $125,000 less $60,000, or $65,000 taxable. The estate tax on $65,000 is $10,900. Now, we can figure out how much his wife would get then. Take her $225,000, subtract the charitable gift, subtract the tax, and she would end up with $339,100. Now, if, knowing he wants to give a charitable gift, he bought $100,000 worth of life insurance, now he's worth $600,000. Right? So, assuming 10% administrative costs, we take 10% from the $600,000. Now we end up with $560,000 left to distribute. Divide it in two, the figures are $270,000 and $270,000. The insurance is given as a gift, brings it down to $170,000. Take out his $60,000 personal exemption, we have $110,000. Pay the tax on that. She ends up with $416,000, which is $76,000 more than the other way, and he has given a gift of $100,000, and she ends up with $76,000 more than she would otherwise. The cost to him has been the insurance premiums, but if properly drawn, the premiums he paid during his lifetime are contributions for income tax purposes. Now, you see, what you've done there is use the extra $100,000 to divide by two. So automatically, $50,000 more, thank you very much, passes over to her side. Now, I don't want to bore you with the details of this, but just mention that that one little device will mean the difference between whether she would get $339,100 or
$416,000. And all this
cost him is the insurance premiums on there, yes.
That device was buying an insurance policy, but naming charitable organization as...
has the beneficiary, yeah. This takes some special qualifying, but it can be done. Now, I mentioned a while ago the device of making your wife the owner of your insurance, keeps it out of your taxable estate. It also means you can't cash it in or borrow money on it, too, without her consent. But I have accident insurance in excess of $60,000, and I've made my wife the owner of it, as well as the beneficiary.
Do you have to file separate income tax returns to do that?
No. Nothing takes place, you see, as long as you're alive. But if you die, then it means the difference between whether that goes into your estate and is taxed or whether she gets it direct. And of course, somebody says, well, what happens if she dies first? Well, in her will, she probably leaves it back to you. But in many insurance policies, there's a clause written right in that in the event the owner dies, why the policy reverts to the life of the person who's insured. So in most cases, it would just come back to you anyway.
If it does, though, it won't comply with this other, though. It has to be an absolute transfer, and then the children, the ownership would have to go on to the children. Because if it can get back to the estate, I've just been involved in it.
Now, we're involved in charitable giving here, but just for somebody that had no charitable interest and wanted to give the wife his policy, she could give it back to him, could she not?
Yes, yes.
But if the charity's involved, it has to be absolute.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you see, this is something, just thinking about an unsaved man that wanted to escape some tax on this possibility. This little device would save him the tax. But with the other word was, as I say, the charitable gift, in order for his premiums to qualify as tax deductible, why the ownership would have to be irrevocable in that case. Well, I'm sure this is not the best time of the afternoon to discuss these kind of heavy subjects. Well, let's change pace here. And take this brochure and we'll run through this.
There's lots of people doing this today. And the thing that a person really has to do is to find a competent attorney. That is the thing that a person might have to do a little searching for. And I understand you have somebody here that can be recommended to see that these are done right.
Yes, although we prefer that you use a hometown attorney. And it's good if the attorney is a Christian, but the general objection to using a non-Christian attorney is that there are so many of them that are not sympathetic with charitable giving, and we'll try to talk you out of it. But if you know what you want, you'll tell him what you want. And if he doesn't want to fix you up, well, you get somebody that will. So this is very true that in any of these things, you've got to rely on an expert. But once you've decided what you want, you go tell the attorney, this is what I want. Now, if he says that's impossible, you can find out what is possible. But it can generally be written up so you can accomplish your objective. That is, as long as it's legal that you're trying to accomplish. Now, some of the other devices here, looking in this brochure, I knew of a case of a lady that didn't have any children. She lived on a farm, and she couldn't work much. It was running down. She got very little income from it, although she worked hard on it just to keep ends meet and pay the taxes and so forth. So one of our, a fellow I know in another organization similar to ours came along and said, how would you like to move into town in a nice apartment and get $500 a month, or not $500 a month, let's see, $5,000 a year for the rest of your life. And I said, oh, that'd be great. Well, she just wasn't competent to enter in to all the legal details of selling her home and getting resettled. You know, people, my mother's like this, that she's doing some very unwise things with what she has, but she just, you know, can't be bothered with the details on it. So this fellow said, if you will deed this property to us, just deed it to us, we'll guarantee you $5,000 a year for the rest of your life. Now, this is what we call an annuity. First thing we describe here. It's a dying for somebody that does not want management responsibilities to their property. They have a charitable giving interest, and they want a guaranteed income for the rest of their life. Now, if there's anybody in the room or you know anybody in that category, we'd be glad to write up an annuity contract with them. Now, we notice we say it's a gift annuity because the person gives far more than they ever get back in most cases. The outfit that writes annuities and then the people start living 120 years gets in the hole. But you see, this is designed for somebody to say three things. They don't want any management responsibilities. They have a charitable giving motive, and they want a lifetime income. This can be a house, a farm, an apartment house, securities, anything of this sort. Now, let's suppose that the person that has this farm said, well, this is bringing in $10,000 a year. But I've got tax problems. This can be deeded to a charitable organization, and immediately you get a tax benefit, depending on your age, for what you've given away, but have the right for the income from this property for the rest of your life. This is called a life income agreement. Now, if this is real estate, they call it a life estate agreement. But if it's anything other than real estate, it's a life income agreement. And we have people that are interested in this sort of a thing, that they know they're not going to live forever. And why not get this big tax break right now? Now, the third thing described here, there are people who have some kind of investment that's producing income that they don't need, because they just take it in and they pay tax on it. It's possible to place this in a short-term charitable trust. So for the period of the trust, a trustee manages the property. All the income goes to the organization you specify. So it is not taxable to you, naturally. And you don't get any contribution value, but you just set it aside for these two or three years so you don't have to worry about the taxes, and you have the satisfaction of knowing that what you have is going to an organization in which you're interested. Now, there are other things described in here, and I don't think I'll go into them one by one, because you've probably already read this and they're understandable. But there are ways you can accomplish your objectives. And so just kind of to wrap it up, I would say, number one, make sure that you have objectives. Make sure that there's a provision for you to carry them out. And as I say, this means a valid will, some expert advice on what taxes are going to do to you, and then a knowledge of all these devices, or the one that applies to you, a trust, a life income agreement, an annuity. There's some device that will fit your need to accomplish your objective. I have a book here that kind of humorously points out that many people believe that making out a will, or making provision after you, or what happens after you die, is kind of speeding up the process. But this book points out that there's no evidence of any kind on record that making out a will hurries your death, or that the postponement of a will ensures any longer life. So this is kind of a superstition. And in the estate planning book I have, the author tells about the Romans, a custom they had, that they made a great deal of their heroes. And some of them kind of got the idea, you know, that they'd been elevated out of the class of human beings into another realm. So at the taxpayer's expense, the Roman government hired what they call a whispering slave. And his job was to follow this great hero around. And when he would get too puffed up, his job was to whisper to him, "You too are mortal." Constantly remind him. So this fellow suggested that many of us need a whispering slave to come around and just remind us that we're mortal. Some of you mentioned this room. Last year we had a conference of several couples from Michigan. And they met in this room, no carpet, no drapes, you know, it was pretty bad shape. And they said, "We from Michigan want to take on the project of raising the money to furnish this room." The fellow who headed up the project was 43 years old, had 8 children. But he headed it up, raised the money, sent it to us, we fixed up the room. And he was killed in a car accident about 3 weeks after that. He was in this room a year ago when we talked about these same things. I hope that this doesn't happen to you. But we too are mortal, and we need to have things in shape and in order. Now, do you have any further comments or questions? This is the extent that I'm going to talk about this complicated subject. The idea is just to kind of stir you up. And if you have any unfinished business, get some advice from somebody. Make sure that your affairs are in order.
To give to, whether it goes up or down, I think that's an interesting point.
Yes, I think that unless there's a very serious change in our economy, but about the only way to offset inflation is to have some investment in common stock, which generally grows with the economy. But there's an interesting little device that we mention in here that a lot of people don't know about. If you have stock that cost you $1,000 10 years ago, it might well be worth $10,000. Now, if you sold that stock, you decide, well, I want to give away that. If you sold it, you've got a $9,000 capital gains on it, and you'd have to pay tax on half of that, or $4,500. But by giving the stock itself to the organization you're interested in, they can turn around and sell it, see for $10,000, and pay no tax. So there's no money comes out of that for capital gains. And at the same time, you are allowed to claim the market value of this at $10,000. This can be done on any appreciated property, not just stocks, but real estate, anything that you've bought has increased in value. You can give it at the market value without having to pay capital gains. Now, if you wanted your principal back to reinvest, it's also permissible to do what is called a bargain sale of appreciated property. The Navigators would give you your $1,000, and then you'd get credit for a $9,000 gift without having to pay any capital gains tax on it. So these are the same areas, the gift of appreciated property or the bargain sale of appreciated property. Okay, anything else? Any other comment or question?
Do inheritance taxes vary greatly from state to state?
Yes. They do, and I've got a book that's got the highlights of all of them. Compared to the federal estate tax, inheritance taxes are very small. And inheritance taxes in most of the states I've read are very liberal with insurance policies. and very liberal according to the closeness of kin. You know, your wife gets a huge deduction, and the children get a huge. But then when it's left to anybody that isn't that close to you, then the rate goes up. So state inheritance taxes are a minor cause of estate shrinkage. Okay, any other comment or question? Well, then I'm going to put a couple more things in your hands because you've got a little spare time before you go. These are written by Bob Sharp out of Memphis, a good friend of ours. And just further familiarizes you with this overall field of what can be accomplished through these various devices. You sure nobody else had anything to say? Well, I appreciate your coming. I realize this is a kind of a dull and uninteresting subject. But if I've stimulated your interest to look into getting your affairs in order, well, I feel the time's been worth it.